radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling.
Looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
You won't believe what I have for you tonight. This is going to be the most intriguing, stunning interview you have ever heard in your life. But first, Dr. Dave and your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Velo Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Teacher, teacher, come and teach me. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling at night.
All right, if you can tolerate sitting through more of Walter Sterling's pathetic show, there will be a payoff for you. There's another episode of Florida Stories around the corner. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool. Going to Walmart, shopping, and getting paid at the same time. Yeah, there was an arrest. Details, people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at night.
Well, I'm taking you people to the woodshed again. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, a Dan and Becky Gaffney update. Another new hobby has entered the house. Yarn everywhere.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You're not going to say anything about the yarn?
Absolutely not. Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
All right. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling. And look at this. How did this happen to you? That at your point in your life that you're listening to this show, what did you do wrong that you are listening to a live radio show now in your car, your 18-wheeler, driving across the country on Route 80? But think about that. Why aren't you at home, comfortable, on that overpriced sofa that you got at IKEA that is still not completely assembled? How come you're not there? It's okay. You and I are introverts. We don't belong. We don't fit in. That's why you and I are misfits. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday. And Thea Landon, I find you to be a fascinating person. Thea Landon is one of the most interesting people that I have ever heard of, because Thea is like the Clark Kent. It's not a sexist thing. Is like the Clark Kent of fiction writing. Thea writes the books that you would write and that I would write if we had the courage to write them, because it takes a certain level of courage and fearlessness to write books about science fiction and lesbians making out in space. Very few people would write about that, even though every single person in America has thought about writing those books. Definitely wants to read those books. Thea Landon, I can't begin to tell you what a thrill it is that you have risked your anonymity for coming and sharing time on Sterling on Sunday. Thea, you probably live in a very cool neighborhood because you got all that cool energy going on. Things don't seem to bother you too much. You write smutty books. And the reason I say you write smutty books is that's what you call yourself, a smutty book author. A smutty book author. When you are supervising your children in the cool playground, do other mothers know that you write smutty books?
I have confessed to some of my closer mommy friends, but I would not say that I go running laps around the playground, flinging copies of my paperback books to anyone who happens to wander by. I don't bring it up as the very first thing when I'm meeting someone new.
Thea Landa writes smutty books. Now, Thea, how many of these smutty books have you written?
Oh, gosh. At this point, I think I might be over 20, which seems like a lot, but I've been doing this for a while. It's crazy to think about.
The practical question, which one of these smutty books has sold the most? What's the title?
I believe it's one of those lesbian books you talked about, but not the lesbians in space. This is Fantasy and Dragons lesbians, and the title is A Flame Among the Stars. That seems to be my most popular.
A Flame Among the Stars.
Yes.
The reason that I was so attracted to your themes, the thematics of your books, is that when we started Sterling on Sunday, I realized that there were three things that people listening to the radio at this time of day want. They want science fiction. They want to know about UFOs. They want to know about lesbianism. And they, in an ideal world, would combine the two. So we've had a feature on Sterling on Sunday since day one called Lesbians in Space Who Wear Sports Bras. And we feature lesbians saying lesbian things to each other. Lasts about 40 seconds, these samples of profound things, usually featuring Ashley Benson. And it's by far the most popular feature on the show. Then when I saw you were writing fiction, what was the first one that you wrote? And how brave were you to write the first Lesbians in Space fiction, Thea Lamb?
Well, my very first book was not about lesbians. Sometimes I write about straight couples and gay couples with two men, and any combination of those, really. The first lesbian book I wrote, which was Lesbians in Space, came out in 2019. It is called Fire Beyond the Frost. And a doctor travels to a faraway ice planet to volunteer with a medical organization and also to escape her ex-fiancé, who she doesn't really like. And she meets a passionate nurse, and as I always say, things heat up on the ice planet.
Let's go back over that again. As opposed to a nearby ice planet, to a faraway ice planet, take me through the steps that get us from Earth to the ice planet. What are some of the sexual escapades that take place on that journey?
Nothing actually took place on the journey. It was a very straightforward spaceship ride. You know, nothing, no romance bloomed until the doctor actually landed on the ice planet and met the nurse. And of course, at the end, they have to decide, are they going their separate ways or are they staying together? And since it's a romance book, we know how it's going to end, obviously. But I had to pretend for a little while.
Now, Thea Landon, if you were to meet her, you would say, well, she's the president of the PTO. She has children. She has a beleaguered husband. I've noticed that your husband is beleaguered. That's the best way I can describe him. And hides under a baseball cap because he hasn't embraced his adulthood. And I have to ask you in just seconds, do your parents know? How many of your neighbors know? And all of these questions will be asked and answered coming up in just seconds. Good evening. I'm Walter M. Sterling talking to Thea Landon, self-described smutty book author, and this is Sterling on Sunday.
I guess forks make people fat.
888-688-WALT. Good evening, Walter M. Sterling. Sterling on Sunday, you and I are sharing time with Thea Landon, self-described smutty book author. She specializes in sex fiction in space. I'd say you pretty much have the field to yourself. I just realized you specialize in it. How many competitors do you have? Very few.
I think there's a lot, especially, you know, since anyone can self-publish anything on Amazon these days, for better or worse. Everyone can find what they're looking for, and if it happens to be sex adventures in space, Amazon has a whole lot of keywords for that.
As an author who's written over 20 books on sex and smut, at some point, because you appear stable, at some point, your family must have found out. Has your family found out? Have your parents found out? How does that work? Have you told anybody in your family?
Yes, I did confess to my mother when I first started after a couple drinks, and this was over 10 years ago. I honestly never knew if she said anything to my father or not before she passed away. And I was waiting for the perfect moment to tell him. And since I was coming down and talking to you this lovely evening, I figured this morning was the time, and I finally came clean to him.
How did that go?
I gave him the condensed version of my writing career, starting with I just said romance novels. I didn't want to, you know, burden him with too much all at once. Starting with the romance novels and ending with coming down here and chatting with you tonight. And he listened for about half a second and he said, okay, be careful in the city.
Now, you also have a full-time real job. I don't even want you to come close to describing what that is, but do your coworkers know that you are in fact a smutty book author?
I did also confess to my boss a few months, time's lost all meaning at this point. And that conversation pretty much went as expected. There was that initial moment of shock, And then she realized everything about it made perfect sense, and she thought it was hilarious.
Congratulations, because one of the horrors of life today is that people are getting fired for doing things that have nothing to do with what they're paid for. I firmly believe you should only get hired or fired for what you're paid for, and that the minute you leave the office, the retail store, wherever you work, the minute you leave, that's nobody's business. You're not being paid for that time. I am glad that your boss reacted with a sense of humor. How do you think that would go in the playground if all the moms knew, all of your kids' friends' mothers knew?
Well, it really does depend on the parent. But, you know, I would say that anyone that would hold it against me, I probably wouldn't want to be friends with them anyway.
All right, this is Thea Landon, smutty book author. Why don't you share with me two or three of your favorite themes? Every author, I'm sure, has sections of their books that are fun to write, that write themselves, and others that you view as a chore that you have to write to construct the plot and get it done. But there are certain themes that you really enjoy writing.
The older I get, the more patient I get, actually. When I first started writing 10, 12, whatever it is, years ago, I would always want to rush and get right to the good stuff, which is understandable because I'm sure some readers want to rush and get right to the good stuff. But the more I've been doing this, the more I take my time, drag things out. And sure, we always talk about how exciting the sex scenes are, and for good reason. But the more I do this, the more I get excited about the first kiss between a couple in a book. For me, I think that is actually one of the most magical moments.
I think you can do better. I think you can do better. Without being a horrible man, I'd say that's a very distinctly female point of view.
I don't disagree with you.
That the first kiss is what we're waiting for. How about better? Are there other scenes that you find equally thrilling?
Okay, fine. Well, then yes, the first time they have sex too, because especially in my books, I really try to include the emotional component. And it's not just cookie-cutter characters inserting, you know, tab A into slot B. It's really about the emotions that brought them there, what's driving them forward. So yes, when they do finally come together and what that means for them as people, as their character development, what it's going to mean for them the next morning when they wake up, will it be good, will it not be good? You're right, that also is a magical moment.
That's a very good script that gives a listener permission to order your book. What you just said gives a listener permission to order your book. How exactly do I order your book? And then I have an Amazon question. So how exactly does somebody order a Thea Landon book?
The easiest way is Amazon. Some of my books are, well, some of the ebooks are Amazon exclusives. Some of the older ebooks you can also get on Barnes & Noble, Kobo. Gosh, they're... Are Apple books even a thing anymore? I don't even know, but if they are, then some of my older ones are on them. And then for the paperbacks, again, mostly Amazon, but I did check that little, extended distribution, something like that. I forget the exact name, but you can get it from Barnes & Noble. I think Target and Walmart, if they have the deal with Amazon. I don't know for sure. Amazon's the safest bet. Yeah.
Now, the most important thing is spell your last name.
Yes. It's L-A-N-D-E-N.
E-N. L-A-N-D-E-N. Thea Landon. Let's talk about Amazon. There is a glut of people who are selling books on Amazon. And if they're not selling books about sex, I can't imagine they're selling two books. I don't care about assembling a canoe. I don't care about how to put together the playground for the kids in the back. The sex books are the only chance you have of selling any book or a cookbook. A cookbook will sell. What have you learned about being a self-publisher selling books on Amazon, Thea Landon? What are some tips that you would share?
I think the number one, or at least near the top of the list, is you need to have good cover art. And there's two different parts to that. Number one is it actually needs to look like a professional cover and not like, you know, your teenage neighbor threw it together in Photoshop on his lunch break. And the second part is you need to do your research into genres, and your cover needs to reflect what genre is. Everyone always makes fun of the romance books because of the shirtless men on the covers. So many articles have been written about this. So many people have been ranting on Twitter about it, about, oh, why are there so many shirtless men on all these covers? It's so you know exactly what you're getting. If there's no shirtless man, then yet readers are going to be confused. And if they're looking for, again, the sex scenes, and they don't see the shirtless man, they're probably going to pass it by and find a book that does have the shirtless man on the cover.
But your book covers have spacesuits.
And shirtless men. It's like the planets in the background, but also the shirtless men. And we're not allowed to have shirtless women on Amazon. That's another thing. They also, the women also have to be clearly wearing pants. That is a rule.
A rule in Victoria, England. I'm shocked to hear you say that.
No, it's an Amazon rule. They will block your book if it's not obvious that she's wearing something on the bottom there.
Isn't that insane?
I could go on for hours about how Amazon treats erotica writers, but I know you have some time constraints tonight.
Yeah, but I'd like to hear about that. How lousy do they treat erotica writers at Amazon?
Pretty badly. If you think about how much they must be making off of erotica writers, you'd think they would treat us pretty well. You cannot run ads on Amazon for things that they put in the erotica category. Unless they've changed it, which they might have, and I'm sure a million people are going to tweet at me about how wrong I am now that I'm saying this on the radio. But no, considering how much money we make for them, you can't advertise there. If they don't like one little thing about your book, it's called Dungeon, and people can't find it unless... the Dungeon, I know. The jokes just write themselves.
Yeah.
You actually have to link people to the book if your book has been dungeoned. And I get where they're coming from. You know, they don't want the 10-year-old kid on the playground to come across the book cover with the lady with no pants on it. But again, if you think about how much money they have to be making off of these erotica books, and they kind of just leave us to fend for ourselves.
Erotica books go to the dungeon. Books supportive of Trump go to the dungeon. My guess is that's about how it goes. This is fantastic. Thea Landon, what's the name of your latest book? What is the title that right now Midnight Misfits should go in order immediately? What's the latest title?
The latest title is called Tangled in His Possession. It releases on Friday the 13th because I knew I wanted to release it this October. I'm sure the possession thing has clued you into the paranormal romance aspect of it. So it releases on Friday the 13th. Though I did just get an email from Amazon, who actually did something nice for a change.
What'd they do? Good evening, Walter M. Sterling. Sterling on Sunday. Coming up in just seconds, a report from North Pole, Alaska. Yes, it's that time of year. Oh my gosh. Dr. Dave with your weather.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Velo Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Teacher, teacher, come and teach me. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling at night.
All right, if you can tolerate sitting through more of Walter Sterling's pathetic show, there will be a payoff for you. There's another episode of Florida Stories around the corner. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own V-Lo Hool. Going to Walmart, shopping, and getting paid at the same time. Yeah, there was an arrest. Details. People of Walmart, later Sterling at night.
Tonight, a Dan and Becky Gaffney update. Another new hobby has entered the house. Yarn everywhere.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You're not going to say anything about the yarn?
Absolutely not.
Well, I'm taking you people to the woodshed again. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
For Sterling
tonight,
on Sundays,
and
I'm
you
James
on the toll
Parker,
free 888-688-WALT.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us on Florida Stories. For our first Florida story, we're going to go down to the Miami area where we have a Florida woman who is pulled over, and it's the middle of the night and it's on the weekend and you know what's about to happen. So the cop walks up with the body cam footage and she looks like she's maybe between 20 and 25 years old. Kind of, I don't know, how do you say, beautiful, But clearly she's had some sort of intoxicant enter her bloodstream this night. And so it starts out normal, just like your regular old Florida DWI, like this.
Deputy's over at the sheriff's office. All right, the reason you're getting stopped is you're all over the road. You got a call about you, about reckless driving. All right, what's going on tonight?
Sorry, I gotta get home.
All right, how much have you had to drink tonight?
Not a lot.
Not a lot? All right, and you have a license on you?
Yeah.
All right.
So this is a story we've heard before. How much have you had to drink? Oh, not a lot, but she's slurring. She's having a hard time understanding the request coming from the cop. She's swerving all over the road. The reason why I have to cut it off there is when she is asked to step out the car, she's not wearing any drawers. I don't know what y'all say up north, but in the south either. That's just a nice way to say she's got nothing on. No pants, no panties, no thong, no G-string, no dental floss. She's got nothing, nothing. And there's no more to the story there. I just thought that was kind of hot, actually. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
You know what a honey badger is? You know what a honey badger is, right? A honey badger is an animal that's vicious. It sees the eggs, the nest of another animal, decides it likes the nest, eats the eggs, scares away the mother animal, and then occupies the nest. That's a honey badger. I think that Taylor Swift is a honey badger. That's my theory. And here's Dorothy Sterling. We're doing the show tonight from New York City, from the WFAN studios, the overpriced WFAN studios that are over-equipped. They really don't need all this stuff to do it. But because I'm in New York City, I could not have Dorothy Sterling on the show with me. She's a student at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. She suffered through the pandemic. She had to have food brought to her dormitory room during the pandemic for reasons that remain a mystery to all of us. Dorothy Sterling, good evening.
Good evening, Dad.
I believe that Taylor Swift is a honey badger.
Do you remember those videos, you know, the honey badger trend from, you know, those videos, they said the swear words and all that?
Yes.
Yes, that's what she is, yeah.
Because in every romance relationship that Taylor Swift has ever had, it seems she has bought real estate near or next to the boyfriend. So, for example, with Connor Kennedy up in Massachusetts, she bought a giant estate next to the Kennedy compound. And she still has that giant estate. And then I saw that 2 weeks before she broke up with that poor actor guy in England. What was his name? Do you remember his name?
No, I don't.
They were together like 6 years.
Weren't they engaged or something? Or they were trying to be? I don't know.
They weren't engaged.
No.
But she bought a townhouse on the street where he lived.
Well, didn't she buy a townhouse for Harry Styles too?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
I believe that Taylor liked Carly Kloss. I believe that was her real significant lover.
Right.
I believe that Taylor is open-minded and dates these boys for presentation reasons. Mm. That they look good, they're famous enough, but she's very much in charge. And she should be very much in charge because she makes all the money. But I believe the way she pays them is in real estate.
Well, you know, She's her only experience in writing love songs is about men. So if she tried to date Miss Kloss, I don't know if she'd be able to make any money out of it.
Well, financially, you're right. They've been about boys, but she has written songs about earlier romances that many of her close buddies say was about a girl. That in the first album, there was a song or two about a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Although the pronoun was never used anywhere in the song. It seems people who were knee-deep.
Gender fluid, yes.
Knee-deep in Taylor. But I think that's the deal. I think that like an old-fashioned Hollywood situation, she likes women. Nothing wrong with that. She likes women. But that's the deal.
I think you're right.
And she has that energy of being very much in charge.
Right. She does.
I think that's the deal.
Have you told them the Ed Sheeran story?
Ed Sheeran, and she co-writes songs.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're in Taylor's music room, and Ed is saying, well, why don't we do it this way? Why don't we write the song this way? And Taylor gets quiet. Well, why don't we try this? Why don't we do this hook? Why don't we do the lyric this way? Taylor will just look around the room at her Grammys and her MTV Video Awards. She'll just sort of stare at some of her awards. And then Ed goes, all right, so we'll do it your way. Because Taylor won all the awards. And by
she's always in charge.
She's always in charge. But interestingly, sometimes on the tours, Ed sells out more tickets.
That is, well, isn't Elton John his manager?
Elton John's his manager.
And Taylor just got rid of who she have, Scooter Braun, as her manager.
Yes.
And that was a whole thing. And now she has her Taylor's version and whatnot. Who's her manager now?
I don't know. I think it's incidental.
Hmm.
I think she's very much her manager. Because remember, at the last company, her last label, her father was on the board of directors of that company.
Right.
When she was screwed by Scooter, although Scooter says that isn't what happened, she knew exactly what we were going to do and why we were going to do it, and she got all the money from that sale.
Right.
But that must have been an interesting Thanksgiving with that.
in the Christmas tree farm?
Yes. And then she grew up, see, what she always denies is that she grew up in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
She grew up at the Jersey Shore.
She did, on a Christmas tree farm.
But the Christmas tree farm was in Pennsylvania.
Oh, lies.
The Christmas tree farm came later. And Dad was an accountant, not a stockbroker.
Mm. You know, I think we should get our Christmas tree from the Taylor Swift Farms this year. They're still around.
I bet it is still around because Christmas tree farms don't just disappear.
Mm. Under new ownership.
I think
Christmas tree farm Taylor's version.
Very good. Very good. Well, coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to talk to Keith Fonz, who's at the North Pole and has a report on all things Alaska. It's a very big show. It's a giant show. Here we are with Dorothy Sterling, star Newhouse student. Do you ever go to class, Dorothy?
Well, you know, at least twice a week.
And Dorothy's also the executive producer at Citrus TV.
Mm-hmm. For Juice and Java. Tune in every Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m.
It's a full weekend. Juice and Java Saturdays, Sterling on Sundays. This is Sterling on Sunday.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Welcome to part two of Florida Story. All right, for our next Florida story, we're going to the Pensacola area where a Pensacola man is in trouble for firing some shots out of his vehicle. All right, well, that's frowned upon in any state, but what makes this special? What makes this crime worthy of the Florida story's glory? Well, the guy that's taking the shots, he's a 21-year-old Florida man, and he's doing so in a work vehicle. Not only is it a work vehicle, but it has the logos emblazoned on the side of the vehicle from which the shots are fired. And on top of that, it is a Florida utility for which he works, Florida Power and Light. And so the 21-year-old Florida man is even dumber than that. On some of these public utility vehicles, they have a dash cam. And by dash cam, I mean it goes both ways. It's looking forward and it's looking into the cab just in case some sort of incident happens and the state's on the hook. They have evidence. So what you can see on the dash cam is there's a dude driving. There's a 21-year-old Florida man who hangs out the back window. And he has on a mask and gloves, and he squeezes off some rounds into a car over what? Over a road rage incident. That's it. Over a road rage incident. So now what we have is our 21-year-old Florida hero charged with attempted homicide, discharged from a vehicle, shooting into a vehicle, damaging property, and possession of a weapon by a Florida delinquent, which means this isn't the first time he's gotten in trouble either. So, yeah, road rage. Was it that important that you made your point over someone who didn't exercise your preferred level of etiquette on the road? I think not. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What is it?
For our next Florida story, we're going to Deltona, Florida. And in Deltona, we have a 23-year-old Florida man who is now in trouble for a rash of car break-ins. And what makes this story a particularly Florida-esque story, what rises, hey, why do you have some guy that's doing simple vehicle burglary? How does that make it on Florida stories? What's the catch?
Here's the catch. Ding Dong has very obvious face tattoos, and so he's caught on multiple cameras breaking into cars. You know, all you got to do is get him on an apartment camera or a Ring doorbell or something. The face tattoos make it completely obvious who is doing all this. And so once you get caught for one of them, they can tie you to all these other ones, because all they need is the haziest of surveillance cameras, and they can attach, hey, who's got this goofy thing over one eye, with then there's a cross there, and then there's what looks like a couple of eighth notes under the other eye. Face tattoos, you know, even if it looks cool, you should really try and think this over if you're going to enter a life of crime, because being that identifiable is not going to overlap well with your chosen profession. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Today's third installment of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Can you believe it? It's the middle of October. Welcome, Sterling, on Sunday. Dorothy Sterling, daughter, senior at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Hopefully will impress her friends by being on the Sterling on Sunday show from the WFAN in New York City studio, a beautiful, overpriced studio. Welcome. Keith Fons is in the North Pole, Alaska. Hi, Keith. Where's Keith? Keith, are you talking? Where's my buddy Keith? But I can't hear him. You can't hear him either. Sean can't hear him. I can't hear him. Dorothy can't hear him. And he's talking. Well, I will give you, you're going to call him back. All right. Keith Fons is a DoorDash driver in North Pole, Alaska. Therefore, he's the only person who's ever been on the show with skills. He can drive. He can be pleasant. But the great thing about Keith, he has this voice where if you were to cast the voice of somebody from Alaska, from your imagination, that's what he sounds like. Mm. And then on Facebook, you got to go look at Keith Fons on Facebook, F-O-N-S, F-O-N-S. If you were to imagine what a Alaskan family looks like, that's what he looks like. He's got the scary beard, guns. Guns are everywhere.
He's camouflage.
Camouflage. He has a son and a daughter, and he has a wife who puts up with him. These are very serious Alaskans. We found out about Keith last year when he was fined and ticketed for putting Christmas lights on his DoorDash car.
Really?
In North Pole, Alaska.
Really?
I mean, what could be a greater injustice than having Christmas lights on your DoorDash car in North Pole, Alaska? Well, then he became our friend. Now, he had been doing it for 6 years. He'd already had the Christmas lights on his car for 6 years, and yet all of a sudden he starts getting citations for it and wound up having to go to court. And we had luck getting a hold of Keith. You know, the technology of the telephone, never easy. Well, it's okay. We'll talk to Keith in the next hour. It's all right. We'll get to him. Now, here's how you and I should stay in touch at all times. First of all, I have a spectacular website that actually is designed and maintained by Lee Harris, a nominee for the National Radio Hall of Fame, Walter Sterling Show. Everything you've wondered about Florida Stories, my children, whatever you want to know, it's on that website, Walter Sterling Show. And then...
I'm on the website?
Yes.
Oh, that's scary.
That's Dorothy Sterling, senior at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University, with all of her friends tuning in right now going, how the heck did she get in that studio? How'd they let her in?
Can I say hi to one of them?
Say hi to anyone you want.
I'm saying hello to my grand little and my sorority, Erica, and my twin sister, Violet. I hope you two are tuning in. I sent them the WPHT, and they had problems, so I sent them another one.
Yes, they would have problems because there's a game that nobody cares about in Philadelphia is on WPHT right now. What did you tell them to do?
Well, I looked up your show. It's very easy, everyone listening. You look up Sterling on Sundays. They have many links at different stations.
Right.
And you just go to the Odyssey one and it shows you're live.
There you go.
They just tuned in for Florida Stories and they were very, very confused.
Oh, but they heard Florida
Stories.
That everything is working the way it should be. Because Florida Stories, we have two more episodes of Florida Stories this year.
Oh, good.
This show. Plus, we have Strippers on the Loose, Every week we feature news about strippers.
This is great father-daughter content.
It's, yeah. And, but you're in therapy. You'll get over it. You have places to
take this. Psychiatrist and counselor, everyone. So,
yeah. All right. We have so much coming up for you. Vic Ferrari, New York City retired police detective, live coming up in seconds. Sterling on Sunday.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling.
Looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
My gosh, look at this. Coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to talk to Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective, about the disaster that is New York City in just seconds now. Dr. Dave Iser.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Velo Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Teacher, teacher, come and teach me. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling at night.
All right, if you can tolerate sitting through more of Walter Sterling's pathetic show, there will be a payoff for you. There's another episode of Florida Stories around the corner. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker. Stick around for Florida Stories.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool. Going to Walmart, shopping, and getting paid at the same time. Yeah, there was an arrest. Details. People at Walmart. Later, Sterling at night.
Tonight, a Dan and Becky Gaffney update. Another new hobby has entered the house. Yarn everywhere.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You're not going to say anything about the yarn?
Absolutely not.
Well, I'm taking you people to the woodshed again. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
How long did you know Miss Ray before you moved in with her?
A little over a year.
So she was your girlfriend?
No, she was my friend.
You don't move into a one-bedroom apartment with three children with one bedroom that you share with a friend. If it doesn't make sense, it's usually not true. Now, Miss Copici?
Yes, Your Honor.
You have children?
Yes, ma'am.
How many?
I have two.
Any more on the way?
I have one on the way.
Mr. McDonald, the father of that child?
Yes, ma'am.
When did you meet Mr. McDonald?
I met him over 2 years ago. It'll be June.
And when did he move in with you?
We were talking for a year as friends. We didn't hang out.
He has a lot of friends.
Well, now we're here with baby, so we're different, fiancé, whatever.
That just makes you a pregnant friend.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
That doesn't make you a wife friend. That makes you a pregnant friend.
Oh, we love her. Don't we love her? Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective. Vic Ferrari every week tells us a cop story, the kind of story you might hear in a police bar. And Vic Ferrari is a prolific author. Vic, I said the word prolific. That's like an SAT word.
It is. How are you doing today, Walter?
I'm honored to speak to you. You are on with Walter Sterling and Dorothy Sterling, my daughter, who's a senior in college, who is here for the long Indigenous Day weekend, and she's helping her poor father get through a radio show. Now, Vic Ferrari, the reason I wanted you on was because every hour we hear about what a mess New York City is and how it's getting worse and it's not getting better. Now, you still have friends on the force in New York City, and I was wondering. And I didn't tell him ahead what I wanted to talk about, so he's going to have to gather his thoughts for a second because I know he's a thoughtful guy. But what do your friends on the force actually say? Is this a lot of Fox News, or is the situation getting worse in New York City from a policeman's perspective?
No, it's getting out of control. It's funny. I just went for a colonoscopy last week, and there was a guy from the NYPD who just retired early, who was in the next cubicle over, and he was coming out of sedation, and he was telling me how bad it was. He only put in 13 years, and he got the hell out of there. He said between they're cutting overtime, they're not backing the cops, and they're really cracking down on the cops doing their jobs, that you're seeing a lot of the talent guys are leaving early, because when they cut that overtime, guys with talent in their 18th, 19 years, they're like, you know what, why should I hang around? Because the longer I hang around, if they're cutting my overtime, then I'm going to get out with less of a pension. So people are just leaving in droves.
What advice would you give a young lady like my daughter, Dorothy Sterling, who's 20, about living in New York City? How do you keep yourself safe? Because when I first moved into New York City, which was in the late 70s, I had to know which streets to walk down. I had to know how to get to the subway on streets that a few years later under Giuliani were considered completely and totally safe. People would say to me, how do you live in New York? How do you get safe? And I say, you know where to walk. You just know where to walk.
Right.
And over time, when the squeegee men were thrown out of the city, that problem disappeared. I could walk anywhere, but I don't think you can walk anywhere today. What should my daughter know? What can you tell her about staying safe?
For a young woman living in New York City, keep daytime hours. Try not to get home after dark. Try always keep your head up. Don't play on your phone when you're walking around the street. If you do, have your back up against the wall. Same as if you're in the subway. The train is going to come. Don't hang around by the platform. Always be like a cop. Keep your back to the wall and try to keep everybody at arm's distance. And if you see someone starting to go off or carrying on, somebody mentally ill, get away from them. But always keep your head up. Don't have your head buried in your phone or your bag or you're just too engaged with something else. You always have to be, cognizant of your surroundings.
And what should the relationship be with police officers? If you live in a particular area, should you send your precinct a Christmas gift? Should you make it a point of walking into the precinct, introducing yourself, saying hi? What should your relationship be with the police?
Oh, definitely, especially if there's a beat cop on your corner. I don't know if they still do the community policing thing now, but then they did. Get to know the cops in the precinct. Yeah, because if they see you, they might come over and stop and talk to you as opposed to just driving by, and 5 seconds later you could have a problem. Absolutely, I would stop in and say hi and introduce yourself.
Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective. The billion-dollar question is, those police benevolent association stickers that you can put on your car, is that a good idea? Will that get me out of a speeding ticket if a police officer, a state trooper, sees a PBA card on my windshield?
PBA cards, people think that they can move heaven and earth. They really can't. It's at the discretion of the cop that pulls you over. In the old days, another NYPD member would not write someone that presented a PBA card, provided they were nice. They didn't just say, hey, my brother's on the job, and flick the card at him. It's a PBA card is not going to cut you as much slack with the state police or other outside agencies. I think the PBA cards actually don't work as well with current NYPD members as they once did, sadly.
Is there a card that would do me good? For example, a police officer years ago told me that those stickers won't do you any good, but what will do you good is a business card from a sergeant with their actual phone number handwritten on it. Is that true? Do you think that's true?
Yeah, if you had a familiarity with somebody, yeah, of course. If you had a business card from another NYPD member and there's a phone number on it, and now it's not like the old days where someone would have to go into the station house to call it to verify. Every cop now has a cell phone. So, yeah, absolutely. I think a business card would carry a lot more weight than a regular PBA card.
The great Vic Ferrari, who has done the common sense move. You live in Florida now. Do you love living in Florida? Don't you miss the pizza and the Chinese food?
Oh, the food down here is terrible, but it's a beautiful trade-off because I have the weather and less crime.
One question, the most important question. Vic, what is the name of your latest book, and how do I buy it?
My latest book is NYPD Law and Disorder. It's a compilation of funny NYPD stories, and all my books are available on Amazon.com.
Oh, that won't do. That won't do. You've got to give me the title at least two more times.
Okay. So you got NYPD Law and Disorder, the NYPD's Flying Circus, Cops, Crime, and Chaos, and NYPD Through the Looking Glass. And all my books are available on Amazon.
By the way, Vic Ferrari, your Amazon store is really well done. It's thoughtfully done. It looks spectacular. They look like the important books that they are. I don't know who did it for you, but they did a great job, Vic.
It does look good, and you're right. It wasn't me. My 13-year-old nephew did it for me.
There you go. You need the 13-year-old nephews to have a social media presence. Vic Ferrara, you're a great friend of mine. You're a terrific friend of the show. Thanks for the advice for Dorothy Sterling, who's with me tonight. Do you have something you want to ask Vic Ferrara?
Will you write me one of those cards? Can I put your number on one of those cards?
Yeah, sure, Dorothy. I don't know if it's going to get you anything, but I'll tell you what. My next book should be out before Christmas. I'll mail it to your dad, and I'll autograph it for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, there's the great Vic Ferrara, retired New York City police detective who gives us the best cop stories. Good evening. Welcome. You don't fit in. You're a misfit. That's why you and I are together. This is Sterling on Sunday. Driving across Route 80 up and down the 4 in Florida. Gosh, I was driving with you up and down the 4 in Florida. And we keep talking about WLOB in Maine, Lobster Radio. That's actually what they're called, Lobster Radio. I have to get somebody from WLOB on the show to discuss lobster radio with us because that's what they talk about. They talk about lobster fishing and the fishing business in Maine. That's what the station is. Not as exciting as Paul Vandenberg's station in Albany. Paul Vandenberg, the dean of Albany Radio, who does the morning show on his station, and he owns the station. But the best thing about Paul Vandenberg is he loves this show. He can't wait for a five-day-a-week show. He will blow off whatever crap he's got on at night and put on this crap, and it really couldn't be more spectacular. Then tonight, I am blessed with the angel of New York City radio, Robert Carl, who prefers to be known as the name Robert on the air. Robert Carl. Now, get this. Hold on. Robert was, if you know anything about radio, you'll understand what I'm about to say. Robert was the producer, control board operator for Bob Grant, Imus, Cousin Bruce Morrow, Dan Ingram, Ron Lundy, all those amazing talent. And now, here he is, migrating from drive time at real stations. And now he gets to work with me, Walter Sterling, late on Sunday night, a time period that used to be devoted strictly to really boring public affairs shows. But here he is. I don't know what you did wrong, Robert. I don't know what happened to the karma, what you did to that fortune teller in 1983. But something happened that brought you to this shore of despair. Of radio, the despair time period of radio. There is Keith Fonz. Oh my gosh. Keith Fonz is a DoorDash driver in Fairbanks, Alaska. We have a great affiliate in Alaska, but actually, technically, you live at the North Pole. Is that right, Keith?
Yep, I live in a town in North Pole, Alaska.
He lives in North Pole, Alaska, and I'm here with my daughter. And therefore, like all daughters, is very focused on activities in North Pole, Alaska. This is Dorothy Sterling. She goes to Syracuse University, to the Newhouse School. I figure if I say it enough that her professors will look the other way and just all give her A's.
Well, I'll be sending the link to them immediately after the show.
Immediately. Why don't you name a few of your professors who we should kiss up to here?
Let's see. Professor, I can't say her last name. It's like Polish, but her first name is Roxanne.
Yes, Polish Roxanne. I'm sure that'll go over well. Now, who else?
Let's see. Mr. Richard Breyer. He's great. He does a lot of great documentaries. And, you can't forget Dean Lodato. Mr. Mark Lodato.
Mark Lodato, who for some reason left as head of the Dean of Communications at the University of Arizona to go to Syracuse. I don't know what they must have recruited him on June 14th. Now, Keith, are we flirting with preparations for Christmas at the North Pole? Has that started?
Oh, yeah. It's always Christmas here in North Pole for most of us, but like usually every year between like October and the new year, I put my Christmas lights up on my car. So I am in the process of thinking how and what colors I want to use this year.
Last year, Keith committed a felony by putting lights on his DoorDash car. He was dragged into court against his will. Do you anticipate any legal challenges this year by decorating your car with Christmas lights at North Pole, Alaska?
This year, I don't expect them to do anything after I took them to court and pretty much a judge laughed at them and threw it out of court. Well, he didn't throw it out of court. He said I did technically break the law, but I only owed $1, so it was pretty much a slap on the wrist.
Are you aware of the fact, Keith Fonz, in North Pole, Alaska, that Taylor Swift claims to have grown up on a Christmas tree farm?
That's interesting. I heard that tonight on your show, you and your daughter talking about it, but I did not know that before then.
It's a stumper, isn't it? It's not what we'd expect.
Right.
I think it's a press release. I don't really believe that happened. I believe she grew up at the Jersey Shore. I think that's where she grew up. How are your kids?
Excellent. And, you know, we started this youth club here, so now they're forced to come with me a couple days a week to help me actually have fun as kids. And my teenager, she's all, I'd rather just stay at home and be on my phone. And I'm like, nope, you're going to come and hang out with kids your age.
Now, Keith Fonz, you make a surprising number of TikTok videos. How does that happen? And how do your children feel about dad making TikTok videos, which is a stadium for people 18 to 24 years of age, not for people like us?
Oh, they like it. I make funny ones. I make inspirational ones. I make news ones. To me, I'm an open book. You know, if something's on my mind, I either put it on Facebook or put it on TikTok. And a lot of people, you know, they agree with me on some issues. And then other issues, people are like, hey, now you're stirring the pot here. And I'm like, yep, that's what I do best.
Keith Fonz in North Pole, Alaska, a lot of your TikTok videos seem to involve your truck and guns. What is your handle on TikTok? How can I find you on TikTok?
North Pole, Alaska, 420.
Dorothy, do you have any further questions for Keith Fonz?
What kind of news do you report on TikTok?
Anything from getting harassed for my Christmas lights to we had a young man go missing and I made sure that was blasted all over Facebook. And, you know, I like to call here in our little town, I like to call out local leaders. So if local leaders do something that I don't feel is appropriate, I like to blast them and make TikToks about them and get it out in the public.
It seems to me a great deal of your anger and angst is focused at your local McDonald's. Why is that?
Oh, because, you know, I've been a full-time DoorDasher for 3 years, and our local McDonald's got bought out by a new owner, and he didn't like the fact that I made a post about his store being closed because he was having flooding issues, so he banned me from McDonald's for a year.
Were his flooding issues the results of global warming?
No, due to him not, you know, fixing the sewer right, so they keep flooding. Still to this day, it's been like 3 months since I've been banned, and he still has issues.
I appreciate you being on Sterling on Sunday, Keith. You're a terrific guest and a great friend to us. Good evening. We have so much to do tonight. We have way too much to do. And now I want to know, like, what's the weather going to be on Indigenous Holiday tomorrow, Dr. Dave Iser?
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Velo Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. Teacher, teacher, come and teach me. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling at night. This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hula. Going to Walmart, shopping, and getting paid at the same time. Yeah, there was an arrest. Details, people at Walmart. Later, Sterling at night.
Tonight, a Dan and Becky Gaffney update. Another new hobby has entered the house. Yarn everywhere.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You're not going to say anything about the yarn?
Absolutely not.
Well, I'm taking you people to the woodshed again. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
Thank you. All right, for our next Florida story, 11 years old? 11 years old? Yes, 11 years old. What am I talking about?
A judge says the 11-year-old boy accused of shooting two of his teammates during a football practice will stay in custody at the juvenile detention center. That decision was made today after an emotional hearing where the boy's defense attorney and prosecutor shared new details about the circumstances that led to the gunfire.
Yeah, y'all thought I was playing. An 11-year-old is accused of shooting 13-year-olds at football practice. That really happened. Allegedly, reportedly, whatever keeps me from getting sued. But yeah, that really happened in Florida. Yikes. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
On our next Florida story, we go to Okaloosa County, where a Fort Walton man is in trouble because there was a road rage incident. Oh, really? Another road rage incident? How many of these? Well, we've already had one on the show today. So yeah, these are pretty common. However, what makes this one so special? I'm sure there's many road rage incidences in Florida over the week. Well, let's get the report from ABC Channel 3 WEAR.
An Okaloosa County charter school teacher's arrest after a road rage incident is causing some concern.
The Walton County Sheriff's Office says Brandon Crumbly pulled a gun on a 16-year-old driver. WEAR's Yona Gavino is live in the studio now. And Yona, this guy's facing several charges now.
You hear that? Okay, so we get the deal. He's a teacher. Of course he's a teacher. And he's pulling a gun on what? On another adult? No, on a 16-year-old kid. And he's a teacher.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Today's fourth installment of Florida Stories is still coming up. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and catch past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Driving that 18-wheeler tonight, this is the best time of night, isn't it? The temperature is just right inside and outside. The warm glow from the toggle switches and those lights on your dash. This is why we drive a truck, because we get to be alone in blessed solitude, stop when we want, eat whatever we want, and listen to Sterling on Sunday. Did you see how I snuck that in? That was beautifully executed. I am here with Dorothy Sterling, who is 20 years old, almost 21, almost totally legal, and a student at Syracuse University at the Newhouse School. And Dorothy and I were talking about Taylor Swift, and my theory about Taylor Swift is that Taylor has boyfriends of convenience for a public show. I think Taylor prefers young women to young men, and I think she's a honey badger. She invades a nest, kills the eggs, gets rid of the mom, and sets up shop. And that's why at every single boyfriend she's had, I think, she's bought a property, a big house, a mansion right near them. And then when they break up, the kid, the boy, gets the property. That's how she pays them. That's my opinion. All right, Erica, you're on Sterling on Sunday at 888-688-9258, 888-688-9258. Erica, welcome to Sterling on Sunday, a giant network radio show. No reason to be nervous.
Hi.
Hey, Erica.
Oh, my gosh. Hi, Dorothy.
How are you?
I'm so good. I didn't do anything today.
Oh, this is perfect way to end your day. So you're a big Taylor Swift fan, right?
I am a big Taylor Swift fan.
So what are your thoughts? Do you think Taylor's secretly a lesbian?
I don't know. I could ask my roommate, who's more of a Taylor Swift fan than I am.
That's Hannah, right? Hannah's on there too?
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Hey, Hannah. What do you think? Do you think Taylor's a lesbian?
So she actually, like, made a comment about this, asking for people not to question about her sexuality because she's never opened about anything. So I would prefer not to comment.
We don't want to get canceled here on Sterling on Sundays.
I can't.
But what do you think? Do you think she actually grew up on a Christmas tree farm? Do you think that's true?
Why would she lie about that? Like, out of all the things to lie about, that'd be, like, a weird one to lie about.
She's from Reading, Pennsylvania.
Right.
That's her hometown's Reading, Pennsylvania.
Got it. Did you guys go to the Eras tour?
Yes. No.
Oh.
But we're seeing the movie on Friday.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Oh, that's great.
Will you dress up for the movie? Will you dress in a tailor outfit? Will you wear clothes that are appropriate for a 23-year-old and not a 33-year-old?
I mean, like, I don't think we're going to go all out because, like, at the end of the day, it's, like, a movie theater, not a concert venue. But I was going to dress to Speak Now, and I think Hannah was going to do Folklore.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Folklore right now.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, you saw how everyone dressed up for the Barbie movie. I think you should go all out. And you know how they did at the Minions and everyone wore suits?
Should I dress as a Minion to the Taylor Swift movie? Is that what you're implying?
Yes, exactly. Minion movie, Minions 3, I believe, versus Taylor Swift Eras Tour. I think they're on the same level. I think Minions might even be a little more impressive.
Will you be dressing up for Halloween? Will you college students be doing actual Halloween dressing up? Will you be dressing up like, Taylor Swift for Halloween?
I had a friend last year that dressed as Taylor Swift from the You Belong With Me, like, music video for Halloween. And, like, we all signed her shirt.
That's cute.
I have an opinion about Halloween. I don't think anyone over the age of 18 should play Ultimate Frisbee or should be dressing up for Halloween. It's always really weird to me to see adults dressing up for Halloween.
Well, you know, I dress up for Halloween every year.
I don't think it's normal. All right. Hey, thanks, Erica. Thank you very much for listening to your buddy Dorothy on Sterling on Sunday. I appreciate it. You and I can talk, and you can talk with Dorothy Sterling, who's a student at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University, and share your theories about Taylor Swift at 888-688-9258, 888-688-9258. Good evening. Welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
St. Clair High School, English teacher. Yes, her name is Brianna Coppedge. And she had a side hustle. And you know what it was? It was her and her husband enjoying and frolicking with each other on OnlyFans.com. She was caught red-handed, read something, and all of a sudden was suspended by the school district. Brianna, though, did not take this lying down. Brianna went to the school district and said, "You guys are stressing me out. I resign. I want to focus on my porn career." High school teacher, porn star, the dream of every 14 to 17-year-old boy standing in front of him. Because she's beautiful. Absolutely fetching. And sadly, St. Clair High School will be missing out on the quiet leadership and teaching ability of that popular teacher. Brianna Coppedge, yeah, she's on OnlyFans. From the Champagne Room, it's Strippers on the Loose. I'm Vilo Hool, Sterling at Night.
All right, it's Sterling at Night, and tonight we have special guest, my daughter Dorothy Sterling. All of her friends at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University are listening right now, and they all owe her a favor. It's 50 minutes past the hour. Welcome. It's a giant network radio show, and Alex in Northeast Philadelphia, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi, Alex. Alex, you're on the air. Alex,
yes,
you can't,
Walter,
listen to the radio. You
need,
listen,
been,
Alex, you, when you call in a station, you listen on hold. Yeah. It's on hold, and the screener should tell you to turn off your radio.
Well, the problem was, it's the number that you gave out is the guy that is the producer in Philadelphia, and he's got the game on. So when you're on hold, you're on the you're getting the Philadelphia station on hold, but I'm listening to you from St. Louis because you're preempted
from KMOX.
There with the
you're right. You're right.
You're coming in loud and clear.
Listening on KMOX. Yeah, KMOX is a great, great radio station. Very proud of Steve Moore having
in
the insight to put us on the air. But listen to me.
I'm sorry that there was a delay, but I couldn't hear your show.
No,
but you know,
right.
I have to tell you,
it's embarrassing that they play that crap on PHT. Yes, go ahead.
No, it's great. I mean, I love your show, and when it's not on, I always call and complain to PHT about it. But thank God for KMOX. I don't know how I found it, but you're out there and you're coming in loud. Now, I want to ask you a question. I saw your list of accomplishments in the radio career and broadcasting throughout your career, and I was pretty impressed. I have a newfound respect for you.
Yes, and the question is?
And the question is, did you retire and then decide this was going to be something you wanted to do on Sunday night, or how did it work out that you decided to do this? Was there like you jumped from one thing to another, or did you have like a gap in between?
A gap year. Alex, thank you very much for the question. Now, before I answer the question, you live in Northeast Philadelphia. Where do you get your pizza?
There's a place called Swarthmore Pizza that's got the New York style, the big 32-inch pie, real flat and delicious.
And did you grow up there? Did you grow up in the area?
No, I grew up in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh.
Oh, I lived in Fort Lauderdale for 1 year, and I lived right off Los Olas on one of the aisles. And Idlewild? I think it was Idlewild. And I love Fort Lauderdale. And the only problem with living in Fort Lauderdale, unless you grew up there, is that at some point you realize that the purpose of Fort Lauderdale is to do nothing. That is the purpose of Fort Lauderdale. And that if you don't have an annuity, gee, I didn't have an annuity. At some point you go, oh, God, I actually have to work. And Fort Lauderdale is not conducive to going to work. It's sort of Toontown. Would you agree with me, Alex?
Well, I was a tower climber, and we went out in all kinds of weather, but especially in the on the hot summer afternoons, it's just a job I didn't enjoy, but I did it to pay the bills. Eventually, I almost fell off a tower, and I decided that due to divine providence, I was saved, so I thought this is an opportunity for me now just to stop doing it. Because I was climbing that tower in off I-95. They used to call it the Candelabra down there.
Yeah.
And well, there was no elevator. You had to climb by hand.
Oh. Did you listen to Neil Rogers, my very favorite local talk show host of all time?
The best of all time was Neil Rogers, and there was not a moment that if I could spare, I would tune him in constantly, because he was just a master of what I call reality. Whatever he was talking about was, it was not scripted. Everything just was impromptu, and it was great. You don't hear that as much anymore.
No, he was a brilliant man. All right, thank you, Alex. I will answer your question, and here's the answer to the question. I was a consultant. I wore wingtip shoes and a suit for many, many years, and I gave advice to all types of media companies, from Parade Magazine to Sirius Satellite Radio, on how to grow audience share. And I was really lucky. I had great clients who paid on time and let me stay at Ritz-Carlton's. But I did it for a long time. And anything that you do for a long time, 20, 25 years, if you fall off a tower, whatever it is, you get tired of it. I needed to do something else. And I was sitting with Chris Olivero, the president of programming for CBS Radio, about 9 years ago, and I said, well, Chris, obviously I should be the president of programming for CBS Radio and not you. And he agreed. And I said, well, what do you think I should do? And we talked, and he said, well, do you ever think of being a talk show host? Well, I had been a talk show host in New York City as my first job out of college. I was one at WOR-FM and then at WNBC-FM. And it's a hard thing to do. And I said to him, look, the good news is you don't have a talk station in New York City. And he said, yeah, but I got one in Philadelphia, and that's what you're going to do. And that's how that happened. I love it. I enjoy it. I am mystified that there aren't thousands of program directors fighting to have me on 5 days a week. This is what I have today. I am lucky. I am blessed. And I thank you for listening, Alex, and thank you for your charming and sweet question. 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. I am here with Dorothy Sterling, my daughter who goes to college, and we're discussing the finer points of Taylor Swift's career. And I look forward to talking to you, and so does she. I say that the bottom line with Taylor Swift, and there's nothing wrong with it, is that Taylor prefers girls. And that's why none of these relationships work out. And also, more interesting to me, none of these boyfriends ever say one bad word.
Well, they know what's going to happen. There'll be an entire album and hit song about them. I mean, you heard Harry Styles with the song Style.
But I think he liked that song. I mean, that was a good song.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good song.
It wasn't critical of him like the Joe Jonas song.
No, no. But now they're friends, I think. Joe Jonas and Taylor.
Do you?
I think.
But didn't he break up with Sophie Turner? I think she's friends with his ex.
Mm. Oh, you know who she's friends with? The guy from Twilight. What's his name? Taylor Lautner.
Taylor Lautner, yes. Because I think she knows she made a mistake there. How do you feel? 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. You and I can stay in touch at all times. My email's waltermsterling@gmail.com. Every email gets answered. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Who was this man? What was it? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Good evening. Sterling on Sunday. Coming up in just seconds, you and I will talk to Dave Scott, an expert on UFOs. UFOs. In seconds on Sterling on Sunday. Now, Dr. Dave Iser.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own V-Lo Hool. Going to Walmart, shopping, and getting paid at the same time. Yeah, there was an arrest. Details, people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at night.
Tonight, a Dan and Becky Gaffney update. Another new hobby has entered the house. Yarn everywhere.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You're not going to say anything about the yarn?
Absolutely not.
Well, I'm taking you people to the woodshed again. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Dave Scott, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi.
What's up?
Dave, hello. Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Dave, what were you doing? Were you bonding with space aliens?
No, you know what? It's Canadian Thanksgiving up here, and I know your millions of Canadian listeners would be welcome for me to say happy Thanksgiving, and I was just talking some football with my dad.
Now, how do you celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving differently than Thanksgiving in the United States?
Well, considering it was about 75 degrees here, I decided to go fishing in the river because the salmon run is on, and I decided to get up before dawn and go fishing, dip the line in for a few casts and try and catch some salmon today. And then a good turkey dinner with the family, and now we watch NFL highlights.
Did you catch any salmon?
I caught two today. I caught two, and I put them both back.
How big were they?
Oh, probably the big one was about 12 pounds.
Now, Dave Scott's an expert on all things UFOs. How do you feel about the U.S. government's new official UFO website? Have you seen that?
I have seen the website. And, you know, Walter, it's one of those things where I think there's a lot of question marks on it. We were actually making fun of it on my show about a week ago in regards to the fact that, you know, they keep looking for all of these objects, but they never want to talk about if it's UFO or alien or not. They keep talking about drones. They keep talking about anomalous objects up in space, much like meteorites and space junk and everything like that. But for some reason, if you go through the website, there's not much to do about aliens or UFOs out there. And I'm not sure why they are not making that part of the conversation unless it is supposed to be a part of the conversation.
What's your theory? Do you think there's anything to this website? Do you think there's a reason that now, finally, they've put up an official U.S. government reporting website? Or do you think it's just placebo?
No, I think there's something a little bit more sinister to it, to be absolutely blunt. Remember a long time ago, you and I talked about this group called the Enigma Labs, which was set up by Peter Thiel, the former head of PayPal, one of the co-creators. And Peter Thiel has a bunch of government defense contracts with his other companies, and he has secretly put together this website called Enigma, where they want people to report UFOs and their sightings. The problem is nobody knows who or what the website is about. So how this ties into what you're asking about is the new government website wants all the reporting done to be done by this Enigma Labs. The problem is Enigma Labs is not telling anybody where their reports are going. We have assumed through dissection of information that all of that information is going to go to the United States government. So the fact that the government website wants you to report them in to Enigma Labs, even though they haven't named Enigma, it seems like they're trying to take complete control of the sightings and the reports, so that way they can have your personal information of what you've seen or experienced, and from there, Walter, they can do whatever they want with it. They have the information of you, your personal information, and what you've seen, and I don't think that's a good thing for the field of ufology, as they are trying to close another research door for the public.
Now, I'm with Dorothy Sterling. She's my 20-year-old daughter. Dorothy, do you have any questions about UFOs and aliens for Dave Scott, who's an expert on UFOs and aliens?
Hi, Dave. Have you watched the Ancient Apocalypse TV show on Netflix?
You know what? I have not. Fill me in.
So, it's this guy. I can't remember his name. But he's hated by anthropologists. And he has this theory that there are so many, like, different sculptures and things that he believes that, like, humanity was, like, there was a huge apocalypse that happened. And, it like, we were very advanced. And then huge thing that, like, wiped out the dinosaurs or whatever. I sound crazy when I'm talking about this. But he believes that this apocalypse happened. And then... And there were a few survivors, and these survivors taught the humans that we know today of all this advanced civilizations. Let me look up the name of this guy. But what are your thoughts? Do you think that
what you're actually saying is actually one of the theories that they also believe happened on Mars, that there was some sort of nuclear apocalypse that happened there, and that there was a previous civilization on Mars, and that it got wiped out, and that's why there's no atmosphere there anymore. So I don't think the theory of what you're talking about is that far-fetched. I mean, it all depends on what you believe. I mean, don't forget, I mean, there's a lot of people who believe in creationism, that the world is only 6,000 years old, which doesn't really define dinosaurs, in my opinion. But, you know, there's a lot of different theories, and I have heard the theory of that, you know, civilization has been wiped out a couple of times over the last billion years because we just get too stupid and we get narcissistic with our toys. Example, look at the hell in the handbasket the world is in today. So I actually think that there is great plausibility of that theory.
Do you know the name Graham Hancock?
Yes.
Yes, he's the host of that show. You should definitely check out.
I will do that.
Dave Scott, what's the name of your show? How do we get in touch with you?
Everything can be found, Walter, at spacedoutradio.com.
Spacedoutradio.com. Our great friend Dave Scott, thank you so much for being on Sterling on Sunday. Good evening. It's about 15 past the hour. You and I are always having a good time. And my phone number is 888-688-WALT. Tonight, our special guest host is Dorothy Sterling, student at Syracuse University. Welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday.
For our last floor story, we have the cops showing up to a minor fender bender. It's in a parking lot, and a guy just tapped another guy, but he's having trouble unwinding himself from the situation because he's extremely drunk. And so when the cops show up, they're like, sir, can you get out of the car? Have you had anything to drink? He's like, no, I haven't had anything to drink. And so we go to the body cam footage about 8 minutes and 40 seconds in, and he tries to drop the old, do you know who I am scenario. Yes, do you know who I am? No, drunk Florida man, I don't know who you are. Well, my wife's a cop, if that helps anything, which I'm not sure it does.
Have you had anything to drink today?
No, I didn't.
You didn't? Would you rather feel sobriety exercise?
Oh, no. You want to feel sobriety? Because I didn't do nothing wrong. I left the damn festival, came over here.
Okay. Because you're behind the wheel and you're driving when I got here.
Oh, okay. So you're assuming I'm drunk.
Well, it's your job to disprove me and dispel my fear that you are.
Okay, so you could tell the little boy behind you that I know Peter Petrakis and everybody. So, okay.
I think he might have been lying. I think he might have had a drink or two that day. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
This concludes today's episodes of Florida Stories. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Can you believe it? There is Dorothy Sterling, student at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Now, Dorothy is obsessed with the show Below Deck Australia.
Mm-hmm.
The
show Down Under.
The Below Deck Down Under.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sean, do you have a piece of audio about Below Deck Down Under? Would you play that now?
Women should be able to be blackout drunk if they want to. We should be able to stand in a room naked and not have anyone do anything to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you are allowed to be drunk. You're allowed to be.
Yeah.
It's the other person's problem.
Yeah.
However, Laura expressed that it wasn't fair that Luke was fired. She also told Margot that she was sad that Luke was no longer there and said she would have welcomed him into her room.
Oh, poor Luke. I should have just kept him happy.
And if he comes naked in my cabin, I'll be like, hello, yes.
Yeah, you would have loved it.
Margot told Captain Jason she thought Laura's comment was, quote, really insensitive, and he agreed.
To actually come back and say that to you of all people, there's no words for it.
Now, Dorothy Sterling, the Below Deck series, Below Deck Down Under, now is focused on Australia. And what I find interesting about the show is that really what it's about is about Australian high school dropouts who wear too tight uniforms and have no perceptible skills other than the fact that they're always overwhelmed. Putting out the glasses, they're overwhelmed. New deck members are overwhelming to them. When the service goes well, they're overwhelmed. When it goes poorly, they're overwhelmed. Why are you obsessed with Below Deck Down Under?
Well, you said it best, but they're all very attractive, and they all seem to think this is the most important thing on planet Earth. And to me, it is. Yes, I want to be in one of those super yachts. I'd love to be one of those charter guests. But it's like, it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's like peak reality television. It is everything you want. You have problems with the ocean. You never know what's going to happen. The wave, the tide's going in. Oh no, we're on the island that when the tide is high, it completely disappears. Oh no, how did we get in that situation? We don't know. And then we have, you know, all the relations in between. Oh, the deckhands and the stewardess, are they going to mingle? Are they going to hook up? And then we have the relations with the guest charters who pay an exorbitant amount of money to be on these yachts. And then we also always have that chef that thinks they know best and they really don't. And then you have the overseer of it all, the captain. And in that clip you just played, Captain Jason, he's the star captain of Below Deck Down Under. And he's that calm, you know, omnipresent being who kind of oversees all of this and kind of eggs them on. And I just think it's just peak reality TV. It's such a good guilty pleasure.
Is there anything about their existence that surprises you? Is there anything that you find shocking that you didn't expect from a Below Deck series?
They have really strong accents, you know. Oh, they get like random people. I don't understand. I don't know how the producers do it, but they get these just out of the... So like currently we have this guy Culver. He's from Maryland, and he lives on a compound. He lives on a farm compound. What is a compound?
I don't know.
Who knows what that is? But he's on there, and he somehow knows how to run a ship. He's, you know, he's jumping off, and he's riding in his jet skis. And then we also have some guy from Brooklyn, who worked on a commercial ship. What does he know about super yachting? And then we have this sweet girl. What's her name? Aisha. She's this sweet girl from New Zealand. She's just so happy to be there. And so I need to know how these producers cast these people and why and how do they have so many? This series has been on for a long time. It's such an interesting business. Like, how do they get all these people?
No matter what the series is, Mediterranean, sailing yacht, there's always trouble with the chef.
Mm-hmm.
The chef seems to be the epicenter of all of the problems. Have you found that to be true?
Oh, yes. Recently on the first season of Down Under, we had Chef Ryan. And, you know, we have the good old sob story. His dad died on 9/11, but in 2009. So a little complicated there. You know, he owned this pizza parlor and he's like this New York Italian and he's just an a-hole, you know, like it's just awful. And he's horrible. Taisha, this sweet steward, she's the chef, the chief stew, as they call it. And she's just trying to get the food out to the guests warm and Ryan has all these ideas of how his food should be served, and it's just a mess. And the captain never seems to like the chef. Never seems to like the chef.
I've always thought that the opportunity for Below Deck and for Bravo is to publish a cookbook, because the good chefs really seem to make spectacular food, and the rest of them, the food may not be spectacular, but they know how to present.
Yes. That's Captain Jason's big thing, and that's why Ryan didn't work out, is because Captain Jason's like, your food needs to be presentable. It needs to be Instagram-worthy. Those were his words, Instagram-worthy. So, but that's the big thing, is that they need to be presented. And so the chefs that have the big attitude and don't know how to make Instagram food worthy, they're the ones that get booted. They fired him. They fired him. They had two charters to go in the season, and they got rid of that chef.
And then I wonder, where do they recruit the last-minute bosun?
Yes.
Or the last-minute chef from? Where do they get these people? I don't think it's from Indeed.
No, well, they put in post these text messages. They're obviously fake text messages, but they have text messages between the Captain Jason and some random yachting, like, people that seem to know where all these people come from. Where do they get them? They don't know. I don't know.
And then they're able to get provisions. They get the provision shipment in, and it has lobster and shrimp. I understand that, but where do they get can-can dresses? How are they in the
days,
you know,
notice? They get can-can dresses
from Nice. Where is a provision store in Nice, France, or in Sydney, Australia, that has a dozen can-can dresses standing by?
Not only they had bachelor parties on, they had, you know, those blow up dolls for the bachelor parties. They get them, they give them a day's notice, and then they just have these things available.
Along with giant lobsters.
Giant lobsters, like king crab sized lobsters and a can-can dress.
Mm. This is Below Deck, Down Under.
Down Under. It's great. Season 2's out on Peacock. It's really good.
Well, this is Dorothy Sterling, you and I are listening to. She is a communications major at Syracuse University, and she's at the moment fixated on Below Deck Down Under, which I'm sure would please your communications professors when they're not wasting their time watching public television.
NPR.
NPR is the worst thing. It's just absolutely horrible. And today in Bosnia, there is no water. There's no water in Bosnia today. Our special correspondent in Bosnia has a report from public radio. Hello, I have a special report. I have found here in Bosnia that there's no water. This is Sterling on Sunday. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Coming up in just seconds, I'm going to share with you adult bullying. What is adult bullying? You figure you're out of high school, you're out of school, there's no more bullying. Oh, no, no, it just begins. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own V-Lo Hool. Going to Walmart, shopping, and getting paid at the same time. Yeah, there was an arrest. Details, people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at night.
Tonight, a Dan and Becky Gaffney update. Another new hobby has entered the house. Yarn everywhere.
Tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
You're not going to say anything about the yarn?
Absolutely not.
Well, I'm taking you people to the woodshed again. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain coming up on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Hi, it's Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're giving you updates on living in an old house with our eight kids. First, I think we should define something. Do you know what a granny square is?
I know what a granny square is. Do you?
Can you explain it to the audience?
Okay, so I know you've seen it. In the 70s, every grandma made granny square blankets and granny square sweaters and granny square everything. It's like it's crocheted shapes in the shape of a square, and then all the squares are put together to make one big thing.
This is the new hobby that has entered the house, and I'll be having a granny square pair of pants soon,
granny,
I'm sure.
Granny square panties, maybe. Okay, well, yarn isn't exactly new, and you say that, but I bounce from thing to thing. And the reason that I bounced into granny squares this weekend was because one of the kids wanted to learn to make a granny square.
Apparently, this is popular in the teenager set.
I guess that granny square is kind of coming back in the form of sweaters and pants and just, you know, little fashion accessories everywhere.
So when Becky gets a new hobby or interest, it consumes her. And that's all you do. You've gone from no knowledge of granny squares to putting together entire wardrobes of granny squares in about a day.
Yes. So my grandmothers made granny squares and put things together, but I never learned to make a granny square. As far as sewing and crocheting and all those kinds of arts that I do, I'm self-taught. My grandmothers didn't teach me, probably because I was unteachable and a huge pain, as I still am today. Yeah. But because if I want to learn something, I want to look at it. I want to learn it, and I want to do it right then and there, and I have to do it to the end. So it's not like I can make the one granny square with our daughter who wanted to learn and be done.
There is a word for this phrase, I think, that comes to my mind.
Is there?
Obsessive compulsive.
Okay, no, I don't think that's what it is. Some people call this part of the obsessing in like the ADHD autism range, but you know, I think it's just my personality. I like to do something, and I have to be able to do it and do it to completion. So I spent 10 and a half hours yesterday making granny squares.
She's not exaggerating.
No.
On the couch, nothing but crocheting all day.
Because I had to finish. So the night before I learned to make a granny square, and I made two stockings. I taught the kids, and I made a sweater and a headscarf. Then the next morning, the next child had asked me to make her something, so I had to finish crocheting every granny square for the sweater project.
And so how this ends is, again, I'm going to be wearing, like, granny square bell-bottom pants and granny square vest to work.
I don't think you will. Only the girls are going to be wearing it because they've asked. But, honey, if you make a request, I will gladly sit there and obsess over the granny squares until I get tired. And when I get tired, it will probably be because I have another hobby to add to my 672 hobbies that I rotate.
Walter Sterling would look good in a granny square sweater.
I think maybe a beret.
I look forward to that. Walter Sterling, Sterling on Sunday. All right. When you leave high school, you figure bullying stops. You and I think of bullying as something that happens in school. But what is school? School is a place you're not allowed to leave, that you have to be there. And then there are people who make fun of you, beat you up, make your life hell in school. Those are bullies. But what's the dynamic? They do something you don't want that's very unpleasant, and yet you have to be there. That's the bullying dynamic. There's no escape. The same thing is true of customer service. As an adult, bullying is called customer service. You must be there. You have to deal with it. And you can't escape. When you and I are put on hold for 28 minutes, that's bullying. when you and I are put on hold for 2 hours and elevated up, escalated up, that's bullying. Any contact that I've ever had with a cell phone company or with a bank results in bullying. I had a horrendous experience recently with a bank. I was bullied by a bank. Shorthand, this is what happened. My bank decided I was dead. My card was declined. As usual, I thought it's because I didn't have any money, except this time I knew I did have money. I knew there was money, but it was declined anyway. And then when I finally reached somebody at the bank, they said, oh, gee, our computer says you're dead. You're deceased. That's why the computer shut you down. That's why it was shut down. And then, oh, by the way, my bank had notified all the credit bureaus that I was dead. And then I started getting letters addressed to the estate of Walter Sterling from the bank. And then really bizarre emails saying, according to the following reports, you're deceased. If that's not true, call this number. Well, if I'm deceased, then I won't be calling any number. But that's how it actually was worded. The letter said, if it's not true that you're deceased, please call this number. Like, what? All right, it gets worse. I go to the bank, and they say, well, we see you, we know you, but in order to prove that you're not deceased, you have to call this number. I'm like, I'm standing in the bank. Why would I have to call your number? Well, that's what we have to do. In fact, we can call it with you now. One of the executives there picks up the phone, calls, and it's a Saturday. And I said, they're not going to be there. Oh, no, they'll be there. Well, sure enough, the office hours are da-da-da, and they weren't there. So even though I was in the bank and the banker calls this number, I still could not prove that I was alive. I call Monday. I waste 90 minutes on the phone being elevated, escalated up, executive after executive, customer service after customer service. After an hour and a half, I finally proved to them that I was alive. Okay, all is well. My card was turned back on. Everything was fine. And then 4 days later, I get a text from Dorothy Sterling saying, what's going on with our bank? I mean, what do you mean, what's going on with our bank? And then from my other daughter, Meredith, sends me, what's going on with our bank? Why can't I deposit my check? Well, both of my kids' accounts, their student accounts, which were tied to my account, had been frozen. And my card, once again, after 4 days of working, did not work. Everything was frozen. And they said, well, then my wife goes in, and I figure the longer she's at that branch, the more trouble I'm in. Because, you see, I did not have a script for what to do if I'm dead. I didn't know what the script was for talking to executives when I was dead. And therefore, when I did go into the bank to talk to one of their people, I did not curse. I did not threaten. I did not raise my voice. But I was not pleasant. I was not pleasant after wasting days and hours on the phone proving that I was alive. Son of a gun, I don't have the script for how to deal with a bank that has decided that I'm dead. So I was canceled. I was bullied. They canceled me. And the way they did it was without telling me that they were shutting the account, without telling my kids that they were shutting their accounts, they shut their accounts. Now their solution was, well, you can't have an account with us, but your wife can and your daughters can, okay? And they said, but what your daughters are going to have to do is go to their local branches. Because remember, they're at college. They're 400 miles away. Now my bank has put them in a state of fear. My kids now are afraid. They don't know what happened. I don't know what happened because, gee, when I called the bank and said, what's the deal? They said, well, we can close an account for any reason at any time. Any reason. I said, well, what's the reason? We don't have to tell you. What do you mean you don't have to? No, we don't have to. We can do it for any reason at any time. They said my daughter would have to go to her local branch and open her own account. This was after 3 or 4 days of her not having access to her money, which she earned. It isn't grandma money. She earns her money and having no ability to pay for anything. Dorothy, you went to your local branch. What happened then?
So I go to the branch. And mind you, I'm a very successful television, student-run television producer. I'm spending my Friday at the station working. I get a call from my mother. You got to go to your local bank. That's about 10-minute walk from me. So I go. Well, I call my roommate frantically saying, you got to drive me to the bank. You got to drive me. So I go there. I wait in a line for, let's say, 20 minutes. I go to a teller. I'm like, look, you guys shut down my account. I have no access to my money. My check I got from work just bounced. What do you want me to do? So they're like, oh, let me call this number. And they call the number. And they go, yeah, they've shut down your account, but they kept your savings account open. So you can use your savings account, but not your checking. So I say, okay, let me talk to your branch manager. I wait another 20 minutes and I talk to the branch manager. All of this, I'm on the verge of tears. I'm exhausted. I'm trying to produce my show and I have to deal with the bank. So I'm talking to my mother on the phone. I'm saying, what do you want me to do? Apparently the branch manager back home was like, just tell them to call me and we'll figure it out. I talked to the branch manager in Syracuse at my local branch. And she goes, yeah, let me call the number. She calls the number again. She asks, like, what's the reason? Why can't we talk? You know, why can't we open another account? Because I was told to just open another account with this local branch. And so they said, we can't open anything under your name, even if it's not related to my father at all. They just don't want to do business with me. But then I'm allowed to keep my savings account open. There was no rhyme or reason. The branch manager didn't know what to do. And she's like, yep, that's all we got. So I'm like, are you guys going to send me a check? Can you just withdraw my money right now? They're like, no, we can't do that. So they just froze my account. I had no access to my money, but I had access to my savings. And so I just walk home in tears. What else am I going to do? There's nothing it's out of my control.
But ultimately, you were able to open an account.
Yeah. Well, no. I don't know what happened. So I talked to Mom, and she's like, she talks to our personal banker. Very nice guy. And he's like, yeah, no. Well, we're going to open basically what they did. So I have a college checking account under my parents' name. They opened a normal checking account under my name. And then they were able to transfer the money into that account. And then they were able to change it back to a college one so I didn't have to pay the fee under my mother's name now instead of my father, because my father's allegedly dead, according to these bankers, or unpleasant, which is more likely. So that's what happened.
That's bullying. And we don't think we get bullied as an adult, but we do. I wanted her to tell that story that my scum bank made her live in fear for days because she couldn't get her money that she earned and then sent her back to her dorm in tears. She walked back to her dorm in tears. And this is a tough television producer born in New York City, a native New Yorker, and my bank made her cry. And let me tell you, that means that every week from now on for the rest of my life, we're going to tell crap bank stories. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Latasha Norwood allegedly figured out how to get money from Walmart. Every time you go shopping, you see Latasha was a former Walmart associate, and she understood a flaw in the computer system at Wally World. So she went a Walmart shopping all over the place. Ended up getting picked up in Tulsa, but she may have gotten over $60,000 from Walmart while shopping. See, she knew a weakness in the computer system from being that associate. She would go to naive employees of Walmart
And the naive employee would press the button, and all of a sudden, her debit card was loaded up with sweet cash. Now, the sad thing is that they were able to figure out who she was and all that sort of stuff, and she was not using, shall we say, a burner, like one of those gift cards, like a Green Dot or something like that. So it wasn't all that well thought out, but Latasha was going around to Walmart's, saving it a whole bunch of money, and she was getting her groceries, DVD players, you know, whatever she wanted. And then Walmart was giving her money. Some stores, by the way, lost as much as $1,300 per transaction. Latasha Norwood, naughty former Walmart associate. People of Walmart, this is Velo Hool for Sterling at Night.
Well, this has been a very exciting show. We've had Dorothy Sterling, student at Syracuse University, sharing this magic time with us. And here's an amazing statistic, Dorothy. We just heard the Walmart report that we have every week on Sterling on Sunday. Today, the highest grossing entity in the world is not Shell Oil. It's not some obscure Chinese refinery company. It's Walmart. Nothing grosses more dollars than Walmart. 20 years ago, they weren't on that list. General Motors was the largest grossing company in the world. They're not on the list anymore. Toyota, not on the list anymore. It's Walmart. Walmart.